Harry Coulson's Rain Dog. Welcome to Northside Radio.
Oh, thanks. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, that tune sounded familiar to me. Is that one of the ones off the new album?
It is. It's track two, Thin Lizzy.
Thin Lizzy.
Is that one there? It's
the flagship track from the album.
It is. That's the one. That's the one that's been, you know, that's been getting a bit of radio play around the joint. And I don't know, everyone keeps on asking me, he's like, have you got a single for the album? It's like, do you have singles for jazz albums? I don't know. I guess if we did, that'd be the one.
Well, I notice it's on CD Baby, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yeah, it's on CD Baby. And it's all on iTunes and Bandcamp. And
yeah, so I suppose if you can download one tune at a time, you've got a single, haven't you?
Yes, that's it. That's true.
Playlist generation.
Well, it's great to have you on board. Look, firstly, I just wanted to congratulate you on the albums.
Oh, good.
Rain Dogs. Where does the name come from?
Well, it's, you know, astute listeners will know it's obviously a Tom Waits album.
But, right, okay.
There's an album that, what it was, you know, really grabbed me from, you read all his interviews and things like that, the few that he did, and they asked him once, you know, oh, well, what's the new album, Rain Dogs? You know, what's the deal with, what's a rain dog? And he gives this whole description. He thought he was living in a city, and there's, he'd noticed that all the dogs would just be roaming around the streets and whatnot, and if it rained, it would wash their scent away, and they couldn't figure out how to get home. So he kind of used it as a moniker for, like, you know, displaced, kind of,
gotcha,
the lost crew.
Uh-huh.
So I kind of like that kind of symbolism, so that's what I went with.
Yeah, excellent.
Yeah.
Now, do you normally play the double bass, Glenn?
Yes, I do. But unfortunately, due to logistic issues, we couldn't really bring it up to Sydney in the car this time.
Yeah, it's where the car is chockers. It's pretty interesting. Yeah, we're yelling at each other like, whoever's driving, whoever's captain at the time, you need two co-pilots. Like, can I go left?
Head check.
The dogs have got to stick their heads out the window and see if anything's coming for you. We've got enough stuff in there at the moment, so double bass probably wasn't going to fit in there. But we're hoping to borrow one for a couple of the gigs around. So,
okay.
But this is, you know, obviously
if any of our lovely listeners have a spare double bass.
How long have you guys been together now as a trio?
As a trio, well, we've been playing together for years in, like, a whole bunch of different things around Melbourne, like just a lot of session work. We actually scored, we got a Skype about this one, we scored a gig as, if anyone saw the opening gala for the Melbourne International Comedy Festival last Saturday, at the very end there was a band come on and played K-San with Adam Hills. They were totally obscured by smoke and you can't recognise any of them, but it was us, I guarantee you, it was us.
Excellent.
But yeah, just doing session work in, like, bands and things around the place. You know, me and Jimmy played in a hip-hop band for a while. Me and Glenn played in a big band for a while. And we just, you know, shout each other out for gigs and things like that. This year, of course, it was originally recorded with bass player Lewis Gill, who he's off busy touring with the Davidson Brothers, a bluegrass troupe at the moment. And so Glenn's kindly stepped in to fill his shoes and is just absolutely killing it. So this is the trio now. This has been like this for the last maybe 6 months or so.
Okay.
And it's, you know, going to continue as so for the foreseeable future.
Excellent. Well, you seem to have a great rapport amongst the three of you, and you're gelling really well. I mean,
it sounds
fantastic.
Oh, and, you know, like I said, we've played with each other for that long in various different things. You kind of figure it out.
If you weren't musicians, what's the most bizarre thing that you would be?
Oh, I've got an
answer for you.
My day job is
so
actually
this is Glenn
rope
we're
access
talking to
maintenance.
Now.
It's rope access maintenance. So basically I jump off really tall
buildings
attached to ropes and fix stuff or whatever needs to be done.
Yeah, and it's we always knew this, and we've just discovered all of his amazing Spider-Man talents in the last couple of days, because you'll be hanging out at 3 a.m. at various places when you're on tour, and then all of a sudden you're you know, there's like a pole with a rope on it, and all of a sudden you look up and, oh, there's Glenn hanging off the bloody pole with a rope attached to it.
He's
got these talents that we didn't know existed. He's like, how did he get up there? More importantly, how's he getting down?
Yeah, I got myself stuck in a swing set the other night. That was great. 3 o'clock in the morning in a Canberra swing set, and I can't get my leg out of it. I'm hopping around on one leg, looking like a total fool.
What do you think are the most abiding influence from the sound that you're trying to get from this trio?
I'll pass that one to you, Harry.
Yeah, I always kind of think of it as like Bill Evans meets the Dirty Three. Bill Evans and Mark Rabeau meet the Dirty Three is the best way I can describe it. And it's gone through a whole bunch of different things. Like, you know, listening to back to the album now is great. Like, I'm thinking like, oh, there's all that cool stuff I did a year ago, but there's all that stuff that I don't do anymore, that I do things differently. And it's, you know, because, you know, I've thankfully kept practicing and now I'm like, oh, I do everything slightly differently. So, which is, you know, just the nature of trying to push yourself forwards, I guess. So.
Your compositions, they come across as being very simple little ideas that sort of just blossom. And continue to blossom throughout the whole piece.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea that I went with when I was composing them was they're essentially, you know, like standards is what I was like. Some of those the standards that I really, really, you know, dug listening to, like, you know, Moon River or you know, just all the what are the other ones that I was listening to heaps of. I listened to it, it was going on a hell of a Bill Evans trip for a while. And just those really melodic kind of, you know, a lot of kind of Kenny Wheeler. Kind Folk, those kind of just really melodic standards, essentially. That was, you know, a big influence because there's, you know, there's also a whole bunch of the avant-garde jazz and stuff, which is also fantastic, but it was not what I was going for with this one.
Yeah.
I was going to say, okay, what else can we do? You know, what else can you do with a standard? Because finding myself playing standards and doing the same old stuff every time after time after time. And, you know.
And this is your first album, isn't it, Harry?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
First one.
20 years ago, it'd be quite ballsy to put out your debut full of your original compositions. I mean, it'd be something that you'd sort of do maybe second or third effort.
Oh, really?
And
first,
probably ready. Right. Yeah,
start off with a few standards first, and yeah. But I suppose things have changed a lot.
Well, it's kind of I found myself. I had all these tunes that I'd written, and it was like, well, you know, might as well do something with them. Yeah, that's. I didn't even think of that, to be honest. I'd be totally up for doing a standards album as well. But I find it a bit easier to play my own thing over my own tunes. Playing standards, I find myself doing what I know.
Yes.
What I practiced.
Mm-hmm.
And
correct. The correct way to negotiate.
Exactly. The correct way to do it. And, you know, you've heard every guitarist play it this way, so you kind of fall into that trap, which is something I've got to work on, obviously, you know, and it's work in progress. So we'll get there, hopefully.
What's your ultimate goal as a musician, Harry?
Rock star.
Yep.
Yeah. Just, you know. Nah, look.
Pull up in the limousines.
Limo.
Yeah.
You know, Learjets everywhere. To be totally honest with you, I'm quite happy doing what I'm doing at the moment. I'm, you know, that'd be great. Learjets, roadies, sold out stadiums and stuff like that. But I've been having a great time just doing what we were doing the last 3 days, like just tripping up and down in a van, just catching up with mates in towns all around the place.
What's the scene, you know, like in Melbourne? Are you guys got to teach as much as you perform?
I teach 3 days a week, yeah. Again, I... Even if I was rock star Learjets and all that kind of thing, I'd still be doing a bit. I love teaching. It doesn't bother me. So it's some people can't stand it, but I really enjoy doing it. And I've got a really cool gig at the school that I teach at. There's a lot of Samoan and Maori kids, so they can all sing, they can all play guitar, and they're all just hell keen for music. So some of the stuff that I hear these kids singing at work, like I'd pay $80 to see it any other time. So
wow.
I've lucked out there. But again, it's like I get the opportunity to teach the way I like to do it. Like I don't have to teach classroom. I couldn't teach a classroom, which is what my boss is trying to get me into doing. But I couldn't do it because he's like, right, you've got to teach them this much stuff in this period of time and then everyone gets tested. And it's like, no, that's not how it works for me. It works, right, this is a thing. You might get it today, you might get it tomorrow, you might get it in 15 years. Doesn't matter. You get it when you get it.
Yeah.
And I've got the leeway to do that at my job at the moment. So
the idea of an audience and communicating with the audience musically.
Hmm.
How do you approach that?
I think the music speaks for itself eventually. Once that starts, then that's, you know, as we've just been doing here and over the last couple of days, I think the last couple of gigs we've been doing, that has been cutting through enough for, you know, to get, you know, people's attention and people, you know, we've been playing honestly within our means and doing our thing the way that we do it. And if you got that, then you'll get people's attention. You know, one of the gigs we did last night in Canberra was a bit of a kind of a chatty cocktail bar and things like that. So, you know, once you're playing, people are paying attention and things like that. They might be kind of talking in the background, but when you're doing the intros in between the songs, you got to shout above everyone, which is fine with me. I love shouting. So, you know, you know, I can... when you're doing that, you can't be your nervous, you know, jazz guy. You got to be, you know... Loud.
Yeah, you got to sell yourself a bit.
Loud rat bag, which I kind of do better than most.
Oh, that was great to hear, though, too, going from... so we'd start playing and everyone would be kind of talking, having a good time, but as soon as we brought the volume down, you could audibly hear the like sort of the noise floor in the room drop. So people are still listening. They're just, you know, still hanging out on it.
But you mentioned the word honesty there, and there's another aspect to that, isn't it? It's honesty in relation to the personal expression that you're putting across in the music, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's for me anyway, I've had struggles with, you know, like, oh, I better play like that dude, or I better play those notes, or I better play that thing. And it fails every time. Mm. You learn tons from doing it, but, you know, if you just go hell for leather and do what you're going to do, you're happier with what you play and people pay more attention to it. It's more chance if someone's going to listen. It's like, hey, hang on, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's the way that I cut through with it anyway.
I read an article recently that there were three types of musicians: those that play from the ego, and those that manage to put the ego aside while they play, and then the third, very few, who channel something outside themselves while they play, such as Coltrane. So if this is so, what category would you put yourself in?
I'd have to say music as a general thing is an egotistical thing to do. Yeah, and as soon as you acknowledge that, then you're going to go a bit beyond it, because, you know, the fact is you're playing, half the time you're just playing for yourself. I mean, if I didn't play, I would have gone mad long time ago. So that's, you know, the fact that you're doing it, it's, you know, you're doing it to look for your own benefit most of the time. And that's an egotistical thing to do. And I think acknowledging the fact that everyone has an ego is the first step that, you know, like, oh, no, I used to be like that myself. Like, oh, no, I don't have an ego. I'm, you know, no. It's like, but you do. Like, you know, you always like it when someone says, oh, that was really good, you know, and you don't like it when someone says, you know, oh, that wasn't that great. Mm-hmm. But you know, I still love it when someone tells me, you know, that sounded awesome, or I still, you know, get a bit, you know, or, you know, when someone tells me, oh, you could be doing this better. But at the same time, you can kind of think outside the box, like, all right, what was good about that? What wasn't good about that? You find it as useful information rather than a comment. So, yeah, I'd say I wouldn't put myself in any of them. I'd say, yeah, I'm definitely playing from the ego, but I acknowledge the fact that I'm doing that, which helps, I guess.
There's a closer bond between guitarists than there are, say, between bass players or drummers or...
Only if you can play faster than the other guy.
There's more competition with guitarists, I'd say.
The fastest guy's always the bestest guy. I'm not sure. I think there's kind of... I find that across all musicians. With guitarists, you know, because there's a lot of guitarists. That's the thing. So every man and his spaniel plays guitar. Which, you know, then, you know, there's plenty of people to talk to about it as well. There's plenty of other guys out there that, you know, want to tell you exactly how good they are at it as well, you know. They'd be the real egotistical ones. But I find the bonds there across all musos. Anyone playing any kind of music anywhere, I reckon it's more universal than just a guitarist.
What's your biggest fear as an artist?
Not being able to do it anymore, I'd say. That's what I do. It's the only constant thing I've got that if... I wake up every morning, I want to play music. I might be sick to death of doing all the other faffing around apart from, maybe couldn't be bothered picking up the guitar and playing because I'm too lazy or too hungover or whatever. You still want to do it. It's just hasn't stopped since way back when.
For me too, very early on, you get addicted to that catharsis process of playing or externalizing or whatever happens when you play that makes it just so fun to play and nourishing to play. To cut that out. Yeah, I agree with Harry.
This would be, you know, the most Bill Evans inspired one off the album. This one's called Them Bells. Yeah, I guess it kind of what we were talking about before, the one that's, you know, it's got that melodic thing. It's got all those kind of cool little harmonies in there. Cool harmonies that sound a bit out of there, but they kind of work, was the thing I was going for at the time.
Harry Colson, James Thompson on the drums, and Glenn Davidson on the bass.
No worries. Thanks. We should also give a shout out to our Creative Victoria, who've kindly granted us funding to be doing this whole run of shows and you know, putting us together. So thanks to yourselves and thanks to Creative Victoria and everyone at Northside Radio. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolute pleasure.